The clerk will call the next case.
Myers versus Commonwealth. Sean E. Harris, Appellant's Counsel. Lauren C. Campbell, Assistant Attorney General for the Commonwealth.
Mr. Harris, you may begin.
All right, good morning. If it pleases this honorable court, my name is Sean Harris. I'm with the Suffolk Public Defender's Office and represent the appellant in the matter, Duraine Myers. In regards to the matter before the court, we're really looking at two things. One is statutory interpretation, and then one is just an overall sufficiency. They're kind of blended because the statutory interpretation involves the vehicle exception to the concealed carry standard in this particular case. So it's addressed under sufficiency in the whole, but really looking at two separate issues. In regards to the statutory interpretation issue of the vehicle exception, and that the firearm is found in a secured in a well-fastened compartment within the vehicle or container within the vehicle, I've argued in brief that that exception clearly applies. In regards to the sufficiency on the whole, I know sufficiency arguments are very difficult given the standard of review. However, I do argue if there ever was a case that a firearm in a vehicle was not readily accessible, this one's certainly one, even if the court doesn't find that the statutory exception applies.
Counsel?
Yes, sir.
This is Justice Mims. I read with interest your definitions about a secured container in your brief, and thank you for the definitions that you provided. I often ask questions, hypothetical questions, in oral arguments, intending to find the bottom of the slippery slope, because we are deciding not only your case, but based upon the law that we make, we're deciding cases that will occur years or decades into the future. So I actually have a demonstrative exhibit. It is a hefty 1 gallon bag, and using your definitions, it appears to fit your definition. It is a container, according to your definition. It is secured by a tie at the top, a plastic tie, which fastens. You may not have heard it, but it just snapped. It's quite secure. I'm not going to fill it up with water right now, but if I filled it up with water and I turned it over, the water would not come out. Now, if I were to place a handgun in this secure, fastened container, and then I were to place it on the floor of the passenger side of a car, or perhaps on a passenger seat or behind a passenger seat, somewhere where I, as the driver, would have to reach over and make a significant effort to actually pick it up. Wouldn't that be subject to the vehicle exception according to the definitions and the arguments that you make? And if not, why not?
Your Honor, it would be subject to the exception, and I know it does seem, you know, quite ridiculous that the exception would apply to a Ziploc bag, but we live within the nuances, and the legislature did not do a very good job of defining a secured container. I know they leave it broad because the courts then can go into the interpretation phase of that, but the definition is so broad and has not necessarily been narrowed to a certain extent as to know what the limit would be. I think what the legislature was ultimately trying to address was it's about law enforcement safety. And then how many steps are we moving from concealed carry to open carry enough to alert that officer that that person has a firearm? That's why I think the latch container exception went in, because they knew that there would at least be one or two steps to open up such a container. Very similar to the Ziploc bag, very similar to a book bag, that there are these additional steps that would have to happen to alert an officer that someone's going for a firearm, as opposed to simply having something sitting underneath their leg or something sitting underneath their waistband.
Counsel, this is Justice Kelsey.
I have a follow-up question, Counsel. Is there any ambiguity in the statute?
In regards to the, I think it's just overly broad. It just says container. And the other thing is, it doesn't say that the container itself has to be secured. I know some of the case law that's come, I mean, not the case law, well, some of the case law that's interpreted the glove compartments. That's a secured container, but the legislative definition that they've given is just that the firearm has to be secured within the container, and it doesn't necessarily say what the container is. Does it have to be attached to the vehicle? Does it have to be, you know, some guys have gun safes in the back of their truck that are bike locked under the seat. It doesn't really narrow what that container has to be. It just simply says container. I think if they said secured in a secure container, it might be a little bit more clear that, okay, we can say that a loose bag sitting on your lap is not necessarily a secured container in the vehicle, but that's not what the legislative definition is. It's just secured in a container.
All right, you've answered my question. Thank you, counsel.
Yes, sir.
Counsel, this is Justice Kelsey. I think I'm confused now by your answer. The automobile exception is an exception. It's an exception to the rule, and the rule requires the weapon to be taken, put in a place where it's beyond common, hidden from common observation. Well, a pistol in a clear Ziploc is not hidden from common observation. Everyone can see it. So why are we even talking about the automobile exception in that situation?
In regards to, I don't disagree with Justice Kelsey in regards to if it wasn't a clear Ziploc bag, it would clearly be observable. I was simply just trying to address the broader situation of saying, what about a fanny pack that's sitting on your lap that's zipped? I know that's sort of the, and what the, Justice Mims was talking about, the slippery slope is how far, and I know that's the big question, how far do we take this? Is it going to be a book bag in the back seat that doesn't count? Is it a fanny pack on the lap that doesn't count? What about hunters that keep their shotguns in mesh cases across their back seat that are zipped, which is how most hunters transport their shotguns? Does that count?
So that's sort of why I was trying to address the broader issue. I take it you do agree with Judge Frank's opinion in the Court of Appeals that clarified that, look, locked was the original language, and the General Assembly accepted the governor's suggested amendment to change it. So whatever secured means, it can't mean locked.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, I do agree. And the other thing, it's, I understand the implications of simply saying that a zipper on a bag is going to be enough at the end of the day. However, I do think in this particular case, it can be narrowed to its facts. And that in this particular situation, the way in which this gun was found at the seat, passenger seat, at the foot of another passenger, and a large SUV at the bottom of a fully zipped book bag, that in that particular instance, on those particular facts, that did fall within the vehicle exception. And still leaves
If we were to use the distinction between locked and something less than locked, if a backpack can only be secured with a tiny little lock on the zipper, and we know that can't be the rule because the statute was clearly written to not make that the rule, then that would suggest you can never secure anything in a backpack, because there's no other way to secure it if zipping it all the way to the end is not enough.
If zipping the backpack all the way to the end is not enough,
then you can't secure a weapon in a backpack, period. So if you put a handgun in your backpack and take it to your dad's house across the street, and you're just going to show him the new weapon you bought, you've just committed a crime.
I don't disagree with you. If lock's not required, then there is no way to secure a backpack unless you put that within some other container, I suppose. But then that kind of defeats the entire purpose. So, in regards to that analysis, then you're not wrong if you all determine that a backpack isn't a container that can be secured.
So, how do you compare your case to the Court of Appeals cases, like the unlocked console and the unlocked compartment on the passenger side? Is getting into your defendant's backpack any less easy than getting into the console that's unlocked or the glove box that's unlocked?
The two cases that the appellate courts have addressed was a center console and a glove compartment. that was over on the passenger's side. In regards to the passenger glove compartment, in this particular case, in the present case, the book bag is literally sitting underneath the glove compartment. Still requires the same amount of motions, and at the same time, whether it's center console or glove compartment, those two would be easier to get into than the backpack in this particular case, especially for a center console. And I know, you know, if it's a good for the goose, good for the gander argument isn't that good, but it does seem that it is much, much easier to flip open my center console, which takes two motions, one to lift up, two to grab my firearm. Two motions is all that officer has to know that I'm going for a firearm, and the second motion produces the firearm. With a book bag at the feet of another passenger in this particular case, he would have to reach over, that's one motion, dig to the bottom of the passenger, that's two, produce the book bag, three, unzip the book bag, four, dig to the bottom of the book bag, five, produce the weapon, six. So center console is arguably two motions. In this present case, it would take basically six motions to get that firearm out towards the police officer. So I know when the court came down and said the center console fit within the exception, it's still really, in the most practical sense, didn't change the fact that it only takes two steps to produce that firearm, but the court has determined that's not readily accessible.
So the only thing we really know in terms of legislative intent is the text of the statute and the legislative history, where they clearly chose not to place the line, draw the line at locked. Is that really a fair interpretation of our question?
Yes, sir. I believe so. And I imagine this is all conjecture. I live in Suffolk. I grew up in Suffolk. I know hunters. I know that's also something that had to be in the back of their minds. Just because, I mean, most hunters transport those shotguns in mesh zipped cases across the back seat of their trucks. And I think that's also something that had to be in their mind of the legislature in terms of, you know, when firearms are transported in vehicles, it's primarily two reasons: some form of illegal transport or hunters. Most everybody else that transports generally is either open carry or has their concealed weapons permit.
So if zipping it is not enough, every hunter that puts his weapon in the back seat, which would require him only to do that, and puts it in a zipper so that it doesn't freak people out when they walk up to the car and see it, he thinks he's doing the right thing, he's committed a crime under that interpretation.
Yes, sir, that would be right. If that didn't fit within the exception, then yes, sir. Because again, it's not that many motions. So yes, if it doesn't fit within the exception, those hunters are going to have to shift from a mesh case into something else.
Well, they're going to have to put it in the Ziploc bags.
Well, the other thing is, you know, for instance, when you transport, generally, I'll use myself for example. When I transport my firearm to the gun range, I get my hard plastic box that it came in, that my H&K came in. It is latched. It's got two latches, hard case. And I imagine, you know, if that fits within the definition, that has really secure latches on it, it's a nice hard case, it's not a mesh book bag, it's got no zippers. If that's sitting on the seat next to me, closed in that case, as I transport it to the range, because I have to carry it into the range, if that fits within the definition, I don't know what the big leap is to the book bag. And I would imagine that in terms of the key words and all this, latched and something that isn't so common usage as a book bag or as mesh as a book bag, but a nice hard case with hard latches that really resembles like a center console, it just happens to sit in my passenger seat. If that would fit within the statute, I don't know why a book bag wouldn't.
Well, your unlocked pistol case can be opened in less than a second.
Correct. Just like a center console, it can all happen just as quick. That's what's so interesting about the vehicle exception that they put in, is undoubtedly officer safety was at the heart of it in terms of thoughts, as well as balancing that with firearm rights. But in terms of motions, everything can happen very, very quickly.
Please continue.
The only other argument I will make is shifting from the exception just into the general sufficiency argument if the court doesn't find that the exception applies. Again, as I articulated earlier, it's six motions to produce that firearm. It's not as if this gun was underneath his lap or sitting on his lap or even in the center console. This is where he's got to make several motions over top another passenger to produce this firearm at the bottom of a book bag. So even the court doesn't find the exception to apply, and even understanding the difficulty of that standard of review for sufficiency, if there ever was a case that the gun wasn't readily accessible that was in the front seat of a car, I do believe that this was one of them. So I thank you all for your time and listening to my arguments.
All right. Ms. Campbell.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Lauren Campbell on the behalf of the Commonwealth in this appeal. The Commonwealth is asking this court to affirm the defendant's conviction for carrying a concealed weapon for two reasons the court should reach today. First, that the statute's exception does not apply to a firearm found in a zippered backpack in a vehicle. And second, that the firearm was readily accessible to the defendant and therefore about his person as required by the statute. Turning to the first assignment of error that's been primarily discussed today, the defendant argues that a zippered backpack is a secured, qualifies for the exception to be secured in a container or compartment in the vehicle. However, a zippered backpack is not secured, a secured compartment or container, such as a console or glove compartment. And I know the court's already discussed this a little bit today, the Commonwealth would submit that some of the key differences between this backpack and a center console or glove compartment is plainly the security issues in this. Those are compartments that are attached to the vehicle and are not able to be moved easily, whereas this is a soft backpack that is, the facts and evidence demonstrate, is easily opened and within an arm's reach of the defendant. This backpack could be easily moved and carried. It's soft, and as this court noted in its Schaaf opinion, which I understand is not was not decided under this exception, but talks about concealed carry convictions in a more general way, there is a policy concern with things that are soft, such as handbags. And this court explicitly said in Schaaf that when referring to handbags, that bags are often supported by shoulder straps and are easily opened and closed by devices such as zippers, buckles, and stays. A pistol carried in such a bag is not only near and about the carrier's person, hidden from camera and observation, but in some bags it is so accessible that it could be fired without being removed therefrom.
But counsel,
and
that,
I would
of course,
submit to the court
not,
that those policy concerns...
This is Justice Kelsey. That, of course, was not the automobile exception case. That's a case where you're carrying the bag on your person. You don't see that as a distinction?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor. What I was going to say is I think that, those policy concerns apply to a backpack in a car, though, especially one that is within arm's reach of a defendant, because essentially you will be... the facts of this case are that this was very close to the defendant. He easily could have picked it up. If he had picked it up and left the automobile, it obviously would have been obviously not within the exception, but is a crime for the same policy reasons.
Can I interrupt you again? I'm
sorry. I believe
that
this court would...
May I interrupt you one more time? Posit two things. A young man goes to his dad's house to show him a weapon he just bought. He puts it in the console and he closes it. It's right there by his hand. A second man goes to his dad to show him a new weapon he bought. He puts it in a bag that he bought from the gun dealer that is a bag for the weapon. And he seals it or zips it up and he puts it in the floor to his right. One man goes to prison, jail, and the other man doesn't? Is that the way the law works? And what explanation could be given to that? Go ahead.
Certainly, Your Honor. I think that it's important to note there, and when I was listening to your discussion with counsel, there are other exceptions written into this statute that allow for different scenarios. So first, it has to be about your person or readily accessible. So the hypothetical that was posited that if the firearm is in a mesh container in the back seat or the trunk, obviously it's not going
to... I'm sorry to cut you off, but I need you to address the hypothetical I asked because it really goes to the heart of the case.
Yes, sir.
Two men do exactly the same thing, except one of the sons puts his gun in a console, which can be picked up within a half a second. The other one puts it in a gun bag and puts it on the floor and zips it. as I understand the Commonwealth's argument, one of those men goes to jail, but the other doesn't. One is guilty, the other is innocent. If my scenario is wrong, please
certainly
point out how it's wrong. If it's not wrong, how does that make sense?
Your Honor, my position and argument to you would be that a gun, assuming that this gun bag is obviously opaque, the gun in a bag on a firearm is not secured in a container or compartment because it can easily shift and move around in the car and is in no way secured under those facts.
Can I interrupt you again?
Give me some indulgence in referring back to the other.
Let me interrupt you again. Where does the statute say that the container must be secured? The statute says that the gun must be secured in a container, but it doesn't say the container must be secured anywhere. Am I wrong on that?
Certainly, Your Honor. And no, I don't believe you are, Your Honor, but I believe to be secured in a container, it needs to be secured.
It needs to be a secured container. So that would mean that if I put it in a locked gun box that's not secured to the vehicle, it's just laying in the floor, that would not qualify?
Your Honor, I think that's another different factual scenario, which I think is why these cases are very fact determinant, because in that case, I think if it's a locked gun, hard gun case, it has a very unlikely chance of going off or being accidentally fired or being easily fired through the hard gun case. And I apologize, I keep trying to go to the other exceptions in the statute, but I think they're important, Your Honor, in looking at what exactly each exception is trying to do. Because in this exception refers to that it must be in a secured compartment or container. But for example, when you're looking at C3, the third exception, it talks about if a person is going from an established shooting range, it's an exception provided that the weapons are unloaded and securely wrapped while being transported. And so, obviously, the General Assembly is doing different things in different exceptions, but that exception requires it to be unloaded. So you don't have this potential problem where we have loaded firearms, whereas subsection 8 doesn't have that requirement, but requires that it be secured in a compartment or container. And there's different languages in the different sections that I think go to basically different requirements of each section and illustrating what the General Assembly was trying to do. And I believe in this very specific subsection, it has to be something that is secured. And I know this court hasn't really addressed this exception as much as the Court of Appeals has, but when we look at the Court of Appeals language, especially in Dulgaricus, they have said, like, secured in a safekeeping or custody, something that's well-fashioned, and that they found the legislature, by adopting this exception, determined that a weapon secured in such a container or compartment was not readily accessible for use or surprise if desired. And I think when the court looks at the very specific facts in this case and the trial court's factual findings, in this case, this was a firearm in a backpack that was easily opened, was the testimony and the findings of fact by the trial court, that this was very close within an arm's reach of the defendant. And the trial court was specific in finding that in this particular case, a zippered backpack was not secured in a compartment or container for purposes of the statute. And I would submit to the court that these are always going to be very fact-determinant cases based on what the item is. And I do acknowledge the court's concern, but I would point to that there are other exceptions in the statute, and that first and foremost, it has to be actually concealed, and it has to be about the person before you even get to the exceptions. So there is a lot of activity in transporting firearms.
Dealing with that statute, would you outline for me and for all of us what the elements are in order to be convicted under this section? And what are they? One after the other.
Certainly, Your Honor. The elements are that the firearm has to be concealed and about the person. And obviously the person has to be aware of the character and nature of the firearm. In this particular case, when we turn to the second assignment of error, whether or not the evidence was sufficient for a finding.
No, I don't want this case. That's why I ask you this question. T- tell me what the elements are, and then I'll decide whether the facts of this case meet them.
Certainly, Your Honor. The elements of this case are that if the person has to be carrying about his person, so that's it has to be about his person, it has to be out of common observation, and any and then it lists a number, obviously a number of items. In this case, it would be a firearm, but I apologize, you're talking generally, but any of the enumerated items in the code section.
That's it?
Have I answered Your Honor's question?
Well.
So turning to the sufficiency of the evidence in this case, the second assignment of error, the Commonwealth would submit that the evidence was clear that this firearm was about his person, and that was the only thing that the Commonwealth's position is that the defendant has preserved and argued appropriately in the court today. And when this court has analyzed whether or not a firearm is about a person, the court has talked about whether the accessibility of a concealed weapon for prompt and immediate use is clearly the evil prescribed by the statute. And whether a particular weapon is upon a person is must be left to reasonable factual inferences by the trial courts. And the Commonwealth would submit that here, the record shows that the defendant had a handgun within arm's reach of his person on the passenger floorboard, that he was aware of the presence and the nature of the firearm, exhibited dominion and control over it by his numerous statements admitting that the firearm was his and wanting to get it back, as well as having matching ammunition in his wallet, and that the firearm was accessible for his prompt and immediate use. I know there's been some discussion today that it would take 6 steps to get this firearm out of the backpack, but I would submit to the court that that is not the facts and evidence of this case. The facts and evidence and the trial court's reasonable inferences were that the firearm was within an arm's reach of the defendant in this backpack that was able to be opened with ease, and that the trial court found that the evidence showed the firearm was within reach in the small sedan. And for those reasons, in light of all the evidence, the Commonwealth would submit that no rational fact finder could conclude.
Well, now, hold on just a second. You didn't mention anything about being secure when I asked you about the elements of the offense. Where does that come in?
That is the exception to in the C part of it. There's, I believe, 10 exceptions in the statute. And I do, there is a Court of Appeals case, Hodges, that says that is the Commonwealth's burden to prove that the exception does not apply. I would submit that that is a Court of Appeals case, and obviously this court is not bound by that. This is going a little bit on a tangent, but I would argue that when the Court of Appeals found that it was the Commonwealth's burden to prove the exception does not apply, they found that the Commonwealth would be in the better position to know the facts about whether or not the exception applied. And I would respectfully disagree with that regarding several of the other exceptions, such as if the defendant is going hunting, if he is going from a purchaser or lawfully hunting, as are, I believe, C, 4, and 6 of the exceptions. So I would submit that, respectfully, that I don't think the Court of Appeals got it right when it found that.
Okay. Have you concluded your
So again, argument? The Commonwealth would submit that the trial court did not err when it found that the facts were sufficient based on its factual findings, which the Court of Appeals, I believe, also narrowly tailored their finding based on the trial court's factual findings in this case. And if there are no further questions, the Commonwealth would rest on its brief and ask that you affirm.
All right, Mr. Harris, you used all of your time. The clerk will call the next case.